Everyone, welcome to today's Word of Mom Radio here on the Word of Mom Media Network. I'm your host, Dori DiCarlo, and you know we are here week after week, show after show, breaking those myths that mompreneurs and businesswomen, especially those of us building our businesses from home, that we're just dabbling in between bake sales and getting our nails done. We're not. We are smart, we are savvy, and we are sharing the wisdom of women in business and in life, and I'm looking forward to bringing today's guest into the author's alley. Siebert Honor author Patricia Newman uses social and environmental injustice to empower her readers to seek connections to the real world and use their imaginations to act on behalf of their communities. Patricia's nonfiction titles have received multiple starred reviews, 2 Orbis Pictus Recommended Awards, 2 Green Earth Book Awards, and several Eureka Awards. All her nonfiction titles are Junior Library Guild selections, and most have been included in the Bank Street College's Best Books of the Year lists. A River's Gifts, The Mighty Elwha River Reborn, is a Kirkus Best Picture Book of 2022 and an ALA Notable Book. Giant Rays of Hope releases in September, and I have to tell you, Patricia's pictures, they're absolutely beautiful. The illustrations in The Mighty Elwha River Reborn are just so lovely, and it is an amazing story, and I'm excited about having her here to share this with us. So with all that being said, Patricia, welcome to Word of Mom Radio.
Thank you. I love the introduction to your show. I feel empowered just listening to it.
Thank you. You know, and it's awesome to hear the things that you've done going, wow, yeah, I did win that. Oh, you know, because you forget the accomplishments. And especially as women, we don't walk around going, hey, I won this and I got that, as opposed to men who are always out there promoting themselves. We have to gain that strength to do that because it's so much easier to shout out other people's accomplishments than our own.
Right. So, it's a lot of fun to share other people's accomplishments with the world, too.
It is. That's why I do what I do. I love what I do because I do. I get to champion the amazing women that I've met along this journey. So I would love for you to share with us how your journey began, how you became an author, and what has driven you to creating these books that raise such amazing awareness?
Well, that's a really good question, Dori, because everybody's origin story feels so mundane. I mean, it's our story. We've lived it. We hear it over and over. We tell it over and over. But I guess my origin story began when I was in fifth grade. I wasn't a particular nature lover in fifth grade, although I loved being outside. Everything I did was outside. I had a dad who loved being outdoors, and we sailed and we gardened and we grew vegetables, and my mom grew flowers, and we went to the beach and we did all these wonderful nature things. But in fifth grade, I remember very distinctly, all of a sudden, all of the friends that I had abandoned me. There was only one girl in my class that would talk to me. And I had never experienced anything like that before in my life. I got hate mail from the girl down the street. She would make a special trip to my house to drop this mail on black construction paper in my mailbox. And I just didn't know what to do with that. And I think to protect myself, I clammed up. I didn't talk very much. I didn't share my stories very much. I certainly didn't write. Writing was not a thing that I did. It would have been too personal. I wrote for school for reports, of course. I was always a good student. Most would call me a nerd, in fact, but I would never, ever write other stories like most authors do. They start when they're young. So this sort of all internalized. And, you know, when I tell kids this story, they look horrified, and rightly so, because many of them are also probably being bullied, right? But I always tell them, look, you know, I survived high school. I did very well. I had friends in high school. I did very well in college, had lots of friends, and I healed and I grew up and I became a success. So you will too. But there was a time there when I just felt like I had no voice. And then fast forward to after I was married, I had my two children, Elise and Scott, and we had just returned from the library with a stack of books. You know, I think the maximum was 60 picture books that we could check out, and we checked out the max every time. And the first thing we had to do when we got home and schlepped all those books in the house was sit on the couch with one of my arms around each kid, and we started reading. And one of those times, my mother-in-law happened to be visiting us, and she said, Patty, you could do this. And I looked at her and I said, do what? And she said, you could write for children. And I thought about it and I thought, you know, she's right. I could do this. And, you know, when she was alive, I would always joke with her that I was the only daughter-in-law who ever listened to her mother-in-law. And she loved that. So I started writing. And, you know, when a writer first starts writing, you don't really know what fits. And you try a lot of different things. I tried magazine articles. I wrote a couple of stories, which didn't really go anywhere. They were never published. But then I hit upon a couple of ideas that involved the language of railroaders and the language of fighter pilots, which if you've ever talked to a railroader or a fighter pilot, they're incomprehensible unless you know the code. So that really appealed to me, that language. And I wrote those books, and they were pretty successful. And then, but that still wasn't anything to do with nature, but it was getting me closer to nonfiction. And then one day, this is probably like 2014 or maybe 2013, I read an article in the Sacramento Bee. I live in Sacramento, California now. And the article described all of these graduate student scientists who mounted this expedition to the North Pacific Central Gyre to study the plastic accumulating there. And that floored me. It gobsmacked me, really. Plastic accumulating 2,000 miles out to sea and farther. How could that possibly be? Plastic is a human waste product. It's not something you'd find in an ocean environment. And luckily, these scientists kept a blog as they were traveling and studying. And I read that blog, and it fascinated me. When they returned after their two-week expedition, I contacted three of them. I had already selected which three scientists I wanted to interview. They turned out to be female scientists. Yay for females, right? They were more than happy to be interviewed, and it became Plastic Ahoy, my first book about nature. And since then, Dory, I've never looked back.
Wow, what an origin story. I think that's awesome. I really do. So for you, what is the writing process like? How did you, origin of plastic, you know, the plastic story? I mean, how did you, what do you do?
The writing I really wouldn't wish my writing process on anybody. It is a mess. I was just in Santa Barbara visiting with several groups of students at an event. And one of the things I shared with them was my research notebook for A River's Gifts, that book you were talking about earlier with me. He looked at my research notebook, and he goes, you know, Mrs. Newman, I don't mean to sound rude, but how do you read this? Because my handwriting is terrible. I use lots of abbreviations. I do lots of diagrams and do labels. I write upside down. I write sideways. I write in the margins. I highlight things in all different colors. And my research notebooks really are a mess. And only I can decipher them. But I share them to show that the writing process, even though educators tend to teach it in a linear fashion is anything but. Because when I research a story, the article that I read first is not always the beginning of the story that I'm going to write. It's usually falls somewhere in the middle or even the end. And my notes in my research book are all out of order as well. So the hard work is not necessarily the research. That's fun. And it's also, if you're afraid to start writing, research is a great way to procrastinate. I highly recommend it. What I have to do then is read through my research notebook and put it in some sort of order. How do I tell this story? What sort of voice do I use? What's my narrative thread to this mass of material? I can't include everything. You, for instance, you read A River's Gifts and you know that it's written in a very lyrical style, but that story happens over thousands of years. And obviously for a picture book for children, no less, I can't possibly include everything that happened in thousands of years in one picture book. So I chose this lyrical style because it helps writers, I think, find the essence of what we want to say, because we know we can only use a very few words. So with books like Planet Ocean or Plastic Ahoy or Sea Otter Heroes, those are longer books for older readers. I was able to include more words and include more detail, but still the amount I left out is astounding. Now, I didn't leave out anything important, but I left out a lot of the details that would bog the story down and make it uninteresting for a young reader.
Well, I've seen that smart, because sometimes the idea is getting them so excited about it that then they continue to do their own research.
Exactly.
And then
exactly.
They come up with all of those other things. Wow, and even this. And that, to me, is the mark of a good book, especially something like this, because you are educating in a gentle way, in a way that opens your eyes and is very straightforward, even in the lyrical sense of what you did with The Mighty Ella. It's still so informative, and it's such a different perspective.
It is a different perspective. I wrote that book. I wrote A River's Gifts from the perspective of the strong people, the lower Elwha Klallam tribe that still lives on the river today. And they have guarded that land since time immemorium. And it's their story. It's their story to tell. And I worked very closely. I am not a tribal member, so I worked very closely with the tribal council. I also, with all of my books, I work very closely with the scientists who are involved in the research. Talking to these people it just blows my mind. It really does. They are so forthcoming and they're so eager to share their work, and they're doing such important work for the environment. I think that really they are the hope. It's hope. It's books like A River's Gifts that are the hope, because if you pick up a newspaper or a magazine and start reading environmental headlines, they are all gloom and doom. There's hardly any good news at all in the media, but we need that good news. We need, even though the politicians aren't doing their job, doesn't mean that everybody else is silent. And going back when I was being bullied, I think that's why I write about nature, because I can give a voice to something that has no voice, just like I had no voice when I was a kid. That's really what my books are about. And one of the things I try to emphasize in my books is our connection to nature, how we are nature, our role in how the environment works. We have a role in nature. Most people just don't see it because we've learned to live apart from nature now. And we just have to bring ourselves closer to it, find that connection, and all of a sudden you care. And once you care, you act.
On that note, please think of what Patricia just said. We're going to take a quick break, say thank you to our sponsors, and we'll be back here in just a moment on Word of Mom Radio. She is brave. She is bold. She is you. And we want to tell your story. Are you ready to share your journey with us on Word of Mom Radio? Go to wordofmomradio.com and register as a guest. We want to tell your story because when you win, we all win.
In 2017, Unsilenced Voices was formed to help survivors of domestic abuse and gender-based violence worldwide. The organization currently serves Sierra Leone, Rwanda, Ghana, and the USA. In 2022, Unsilenced Voices gifted over $33,000 to survivors in the USA. And in Sierra Leone, there are over 26 young girls who have been rescued from sex trafficking and domestic abuse and now going through vocational training school in order to better their lives. We need your help. Donations are critical in order for us to continue our work. We also need volunteers to help with research and development. Please visit unsilencedvoices.org for more information.
Don't let the name fool you. StadiumBags.com is not just for sports fans. Our clear bags make it easier for you to get into any venue that you go to. And in today's world where we are so concerned about germs, the materials that our bags are made with are strong enough to stand up to the solvents that you can use to clean your bag so you know you come home safely. Check out StadiumBags.com. You'll see why we are the clear choice, because safety, it's in the bag. And we are back here on Word of Mom Radio with award-winning author Patricia Newman. The reality is all need to leave the smallest carbon footprint possible. And it's not about the politicians. It's about each of us. It really is. Talking about the plastic, you know, plastic ahoy. People just don't realize, you know, somebody came up with the idea of putting something that you get for free into bottles, and it's a multi-billion dollar industry. Filter your water and just drink what you have. Seriously, I don't understand it. You know, when I have travel cups, and because I travel all the time, once in a blue moon, I will forget mine and I will go pick up a cup of tea. I will use that cup they've given me until it dies, until somehow it breaks a hole in it or rips or the paper crumbles. I can't. My aunt the other day asked me to get, she needed paper plates. You know what? Compostable plates that they are now selling, and they're cheaper than the ones coated in plastic. Hello? 80 days, and it'll compost. It's out there. If each one of us just does a little teeny thing, it starts to grow. And that's why I also love what you're doing, because the younger you inspire kids to be responsible stewards of the earth they live on, this is how it works. And I'm going to ask you about that. Why STEM nonfiction for children? Because STEM is such a big thing now.
It is a big thing. But, you know, when I started, it wasn't a big thing. In fact, I remember going to California Reading Association conferences, and I thought, shoot, I've never seen sessions about STEM literature before. I'm going to talk about STEM literature. And just the word science scared away reading teachers. But now, there's lots of research that says people who look at the world with STEM eyes, you know, you find there's STEM in everything, right? There's STEM in our Zoom chat here, our podcast chat. There's STEM in our hip pockets in our phone. There's STEM at the doctor's office. There's STEM in what we drive. STEM is related to everything that we do. So if you find the STEM, you're actually making connections in the world that you wouldn't have made otherwise. And I think I've now convinced those California reading teachers. They've invited me this week to come and talk to them about STEM literature. So I'm so happy that this has happened. But when you read STEM literature, you are developing a whole other vocabulary. Not that the words are particularly hard, but in A River's Gifts, for instance, words like salmon and words like riffles in the water, and words like spawn or alevin or fry, which are two of the life cycles that young salmon go through. And they're not particularly hard, but all of a sudden they have a context. They're not just a word list on a page that you have to memorize and find the definition for. They have a context in a story. And it's to me, reading a STEM book gives a kid the grit necessary to be a good reader and to be successful in life. And that's what I constantly try to promote, is that that idea that, yeah, it might be a little bit hard. Yeah, you're going to be reading something different, but it's going to be something that's connected to you, connected to your world, and that you can take with you wherever you go.
Love that. I really do. So describe one of your school visits. What's it like when you get
Oh, they're
go?
Wild. They're
I
wild.
Bet.
You know, one of the activities I do with the River's Gifts is an activity that I found online. And if you go to my website at patriciamnewman.com and look at A River's Gifts, you can download the curriculum guide that goes with the book. And really the curriculum guide that goes with any of my books. But one of the activities that I've cited in my curriculum guide for A River's Gifts is called Only the Strong Survive. And we start with something like 50,000 salmon eggs. And it's really just a math worksheet. And all of these different catastrophes happen to these eggs, and once the eggs hatch, the various life stages of the salmon until they get to adults and come back to spawn. So it's really just a math worksheet, but I've taken it a step farther in a school visit and we act it out. So I call 50 students to the stage, and I give them each a card with 100 salmon eggs on it. And the first time I did this, a teacher said to me, "Wow, she's brave." And you know, it works. It just works. The kids are, I have a couple of kids who are the math wizards, and they're doing the math with me in their heads. They're not doing it on paper. And we make kids sit down. And as kids sit down, because they've died, because of these various catastrophes, and remember, they're salmon, they're not children at this point, there are so many wonderful death scenes. You know, these kids are so dramatic about, you know, leaving the stage. And we have a lot of fun with it. And they have no idea that they are understanding the life cycle of salmon and all of the different environmental factors that go into harming them, nor do they understand that they've just had a math lesson. So it is that that's one example of my school visits. Another example with Planet Ocean. There's a concept called ocean acidification that nobody really understands. Really, it's when the carbon from our polluted atmosphere falls into the ocean, that CO2 causes a chemical reaction in seawater and makes seawater more acidic. Not acidic to the point where, you know, it would burn your toes, but acidic enough that it's beginning to affect shellfish and the way that they produce their shells. But nobody can see ocean acidification. It's one of these invisible processes that we always trust that scientists are telling us the truth, right? Well, one of these brilliant ocean acidification experts that I interviewed up in Seattle gave me an activity to share. And we have 3 cups of purple cabbage juice that I've boiled on the stove and steeped and diluted a bit. And we use purple cabbage juice because it's a fabulous pH indicator. And one of the glasses, one of the jars is a control, like all scientific experiments. Another jar, we squeeze wedge of lemon into it. And there's a dramatic change. The water turns pink instantly. And the kids go, "Oh, wow." And then I explain to them what ocean acidification is really doing. It's not that dramatic a change. It's a very subtle change. But because a lot of the animals in the ocean are living on the edge, it is affecting them. And I said, so we have to add carbon dioxide to this next jar to simulate ocean acidification. How do we do that? And they get it right away. They said, blow through a straw. So I have a volunteer come up to the stage, and that volunteer blows through the straw. And blowing, you know, there's about 30 seconds of blowing, and all of a sudden, the kids are starting to see the water change color. It's not as dramatic as the lemon, but there is a subtle color change. And they see ocean acidification happening. And they're gobsmacked, you know? And once you've got them like that, STEM is like, wow, I've got to read this book. Another thing that I do during school visits is some of my books have QR codes in them. And I share some of those QR code videos. It's not often that a book has a video in it, right? That's a little bit different. But Planet Ocean and Eavesdropping on Elephants both have videos that you can get to with QR codes in the book. In Planet Ocean, they are underwater videos taken by filmmaker Annie Crawley, who also illustrated the book with her photos. In Eavesdropping on Elephants, they are actually the actual videos that scientists took in the field of the elephants that they were studying, that the scientists shared these videos with me. So there are some big surprises in my book that books that I get to share with kids at school visits, and they never fail to be excited by them.
What a wonderful way to end this conversation, because opening up a child's eyes, you know, we used to do a show with Kaz Winters, The Sneaky Mom, and children learn best when they don't realize they're learning. When you get them to participate, it's like having your kid help you cook. It's a math lesson. It's a science lesson. It's all of these lessons. And then my sister-in-law, because my kids always cooked with me, oh, it makes such a mess, right? And then they learn how a sponge comes back to life when it gets wet, and they clean, and then they sit and they watch their food cook, and I get a cup of tea without any interruption, and then they want to eat what they made. So the more you involve children in their learning, the more excited they are. And I applaud you for what you are doing, Patricia. So as we're wrapping up, what do you want to leave our listeners with? And how may they reach out to you?
Okay, so let me do the reaching out first, because I want to leave listeners with the last message before we close. Please find me at patriciamnewman.com. You can also find me on Twitter or X, whatever we're going to call it, at Patricia Newman. I'm on Instagram at Patricia Newman Books. Any way you find me, please reach out and say hello. I'd love to hear from you. But what I'd like to leave your listeners with is, I once heard Michelle Obama say that activism is the work that you do for the next generation. It's the rent we pay for living. And I'd like to think of my books as a contribution toward that rent. Long-term commitment to an ideal takes grit, a quality necessary for success in any aspect of life, whether you're a child or an adult.
Awesome. Patricia, thank you so much for taking the time to share with us today on Word of Mom Radio. I'm so glad that you came.
Thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure. And to all of you tuning in, thank you so much for being here. We're going to close out with our fabulous theme song from Smith Sisters and the Sunday Drivers. So till next time, this is Dori DiCarlo saying go out and create a marvelous you. Bye for now.
She is sure.
She is sure.
She is strong.
She is strong.
She